So first, I would like to thank the organizer for their invitation. I'm very pleased to be here in Santa Barbara and have the opportunity to present a work on the generation of broadband-isolated arthrosigmoid cerebral palsies. This work was initiated in Bordeaux at the Celia Laboratories many years ago, and it was continued somehow in collaboration with the Lund Laser Center in Sweden, and also through a collaboration with the Politecnico in Milano. The outline of my talk are the following. First, I will start with an ultra-short reminder on the three-step model. You have heard about it quite extensively. And then I will present the method that we have developed to isolate a single arthrosigmoid pulse. And I will present the result that we have obtained in Milano, thus in Argonne. And finally, I will address some perspectives that are opened up by this technique. So first, you have heard that harmonic generation is really a suitable source to produce a trend of arthrosigmoid pulses. And those arthrosigmoid pulses can be used in some experiments, but also to do some probe experiment. It is useful to isolate a single arthrosigmoid pulse. So how could we select a single arthrosigmoid from a pulse train where the repetition of the arthrosigmoids is about half an optical cycle? Or in different words, could we produce only one single arthrosigmoid pulse? To understand how it is possible, then one should rely, for instance, on the three-step model that was proposed by Paul Corkum many years ago. This model represents the harmonic generation process by a single atom submitted to an external laser field, which is linearly polarized. In the first step, an electron wave packet is released into the continuum. In the second step, this electron wave packet oscillates and may return in the vicinity of the parent ion after being accelerated. In the third step, this electron wave packet may recombine into the initial state, releasing its energy by emitting an XUV light burst. And the chirp energy spectrum of the electron wave packet while returning in somehow transferred into the XUV light burst. As the recollision time occurs during only a fraction of half the optical cycle, an arthrosigmoid pulse is emitted. And for long pulse with many cycles, this process is repeated every half optical cycle, leading to the generation of a trend. Now it is clear that by controlling the electron wave packet dynamic in such a way only one return is possible is the key to produce an isolated arthrosigmoid XUV pulse. The first method that have been used to achieve such a goal was used by the group of Ferenc Krauss, using the spectral selection of the cutoff harmonic. When they are generated by a few cycle laser pulses, or they are only emitted near the peak intensity of the pulse, for a few cycle pulses, they are only emitted during one half optical cycle, and then it results in only one arthrosigmoid pulse. But in this case, the current envelope phase of the field below the envelope is really crucial. For instance, for a pi over 2 current envelope phase, there are two equivalent half cycles that can contribute to the cutoff. So there are two arthrosigmoid pulses that are emitted. And one can see here the signature as a modulation in the cutoff of the spectrum. In contrast, for a cosine field, for a zero current envelope phase, only one pulse is emitted, and it is visible as a continuum in a cutoff here. For lower energy in the plateau, you can see that it does not depend on the current envelope phase. You still have a modulation, which means that several arthrosigmoid pulses are emitted. Also, you can observe that they are frequency shifted. So the current envelope phase is not locked, it's not stabilized. If you average over all possible current envelope phase, you may observe a continuum, but which is not the signature of the emission of the single pulse. So, in this experiment, the current envelope phase stabilization is really crucial. You can also see that the bandwidth in a cutoff here is quite limited. It's above 10 eV, which ultimately leads to 250 arthrosigmoid long pulse, as it was measured in the experiment. So, if we want to go beyond this limitation, which means get shorter pulses, it requires to produce broader bandwidths in the single arthrosigmoid pulse. And this is why we use a different technique. And this technique relies on the extreme sensitivity of the harmonic generation process with the polarization of the driving laser. With the linear polarization according to the three-step model, the electron can return to the parent ion and the harmonic emission is possible. But for circular polarization, the electron does not return to the parent ion and the emission is suppressed. If we look at the generation efficiency more in detail as a function of the ellipticity, you can see that the maximum efficiency is observed for a linear polarization, which corresponds to ellipticity equal to zero. And it drops down dramatically when the ellipticity is increased. Even for a small ellipticity, about 15%, there is a decrease by a factor 2 of the efficiency. And I will call later this ellipticity the critical ellipticity, the one that reduced the yield by a factor 2. You can also see that the sensitivity to the polarization is quite identical for a large range of harmonic order. So we have here a process to control the emission that is really effective over broad bandwidths. So the idea that was proposed at that time by Paul Corkum was to set a time-dependent polarization in the generating laser field, starting with a circular polarization that evolves to a linear position at the center of the pulse and that evolves back to a circular polarization at the end of the pulse. So as the XUV emission only occurs around the time when the polarization is close to linear, it results in a temporal confinement of the XUV emission. So we have a so-called polarization gating, and we know that it's now possible and effective over a broad spectrum. Many techniques, many methods have been proposed to achieve such a time-dependent polarization. The one that we have developed and that we are using now in Bordeaux is based on an original idea from Eric Constant that is described in his PhD manuscript, and it was in 1997. This method relies on using birefringent plate. For example, one can use the first quarter order plate, a multiple order plate, that splits linearly incident laser pulse into two crossed polarized pulses separated by a delay delta, depending on the thickness of the first plate. Then, after this plate, the polarization changes from a linear polarization at the beginning to a circular polarization at the center at the time when the amplitude is the same in the two cross polarized pulses. And then it evolves back to a linear polarization. Now, by using a second quarter wave plate, this time a zero order, nearly achromatic wave plate, with its optical axis at 45 degrees from the first one, or with one axis aligned with the incident polarization, we change the linear polarization into a circular, and the circular polarization into a linear. And finally, we achieve the desired polarization modulation. So one can define the gate widths as the time interval during which the ellipticity is below the critical ellipticity. And for a Gaussian pulse, one can obtain an analytical expression here, where the gate width is proportional, of course, to the critical ellipticity, to the square of the Fourier-limited laser pulse, and which is inversely proportional to the delay introduced by the first plate. So one can vary now this gate width by either changing the delay, so changing the wave plate, or by changing the duration of the incident pulse. But there is a more practical way to do it. It was found by our PhD student at that time, Olivier Cherbakov, who realized by just rotating the axis of the second wave plate, one can continuously tune the gate width in a very easy way. So we used this method, and we had the first validation of this method of confinement by observing the spectral broadening of the harmonic line widths with correlation with the polarization gating, and it was published in 2003. If we now compare the two ways to continuously vary the gate width, the first one, in this example, I take a delay which is equal to the pulse duration of 6 femtoseconds. Then it results to a near flat top intensity profile at the output of the two plates. For an angle beta equals 0, one of the axes aligned with the incident polarization, I've got an ellipticity changing from 1 to 0 and back to 1. And it corresponds to the shortest gate here. Now, if I rotate the axis of the second plate, I change the amount of the ellipticity in the wings of the pulse, keeping a linear polarization at the center. So I can continuously tune the gate widths. But what is important is that doing so, I keep exactly the same peak intensity and the same intensity profile. In other words, by rotating the plate, I uniquely change the polarization evolution in time, keeping the other interaction parameter exactly the same. If I'm using now the second method, changing the delay introduced by the first wave plate, it can be easily be done by using a variable thickness wave plate made of two birefringent wedges, for instance, and we did it. So if I take in this example a duration of 8 femtoseconds, if I increase the delay to 15 femtoseconds, I can achieve exactly the same gate duration as in the previous example here. And then I've got again a continuous tunability of the gate width, but I've got different intensity profile, as you may notice here on this slide. And especially in this case, there is a huge intensity dip at the time of the polarization gate. Then it will result in reducing the generation efficiency quite dramatically. I would like to say that this scheme was used in the paper from Bimshan and co-worker. So at that time, we wanted to be sure that the expression for the gate width was correct. This is why we did a time characterization of the harmonic emission. For this, we did the experiment in collaboration with Lund. We set on purpose quite a long gate width, about 11 femtoseconds here, that is compatible with the experimental resolution that was achievable in the experiment, and that was depending on the infrared probe, which was about 9 femtoseconds. So we superpose the XUV field on the infrared probe field, especially in temporary, in the sensitive zone of a time-of-light electron spectrometer. And we did what Anna has already described. We did some kind of rabbit characterization where we detect the energy of the photoelectron spectrum here as a function of the delay between the infrared field and the XUV field. And then we observe some psi bands here. And by detecting the amplitude of the psi bands as a function of the delay, we've got the cross-correlation function with the infrared field and the XUV field. So, if I recall the cross-correlation function, using to start with a 40 femtosecond long pulse with a constant linear polarization, I get this curve. Now, I use the wave plate, and I set the wave plate in such a way I've got what I call the large gate. What you have to know here, it just corresponds to a near flat top intensity profile, but with a constant ellipticity. So there is no change in polarization, and there is no confinement going on. And then I rotate the plate until I get the shortest gate here. And you can clearly see here that there is a temporal confinement obtained by the polarization gating. And one can observe this confinement over a reasonable broad bandwidth, encompassing both plateau and cutoff harmonic. And we were able to extract from this data the duration of the emission of the harmonics from the, here for the sideband 18, for instance, corresponds to the average duration of the harmonic 17 and the harmonic 19. And so it fits very well with the gate widths given by the theory. So we are now confident in using this formula, and we will set the parameter in such a way one can get an efficient generation of an azeitated pulse. So the first condition one should fulfill is to have a gate width which is shorter than the periodicity of an attack-second pulse train, which is half an optical cycle. The second condition to get high efficiency is to have the maximum intensity inside the gate, which means to have a delay shorter than the pulse width. And a good trade-off, of course, is to have a delay introduced by the first plate, which is comparable to the pulse duration. Then, for typical critical ellipticity of about 15%, then we have a gate width which is about one-fifth of the Fourier-limited pulse duration, which means that to fulfill the first condition, one should use few cycle pulses with a duration below 6 femtoseconds. When we are able to produce such a short gate widths, then again the current envelope phase plays a major role. You can see in the simulation realized by Vasily Strelkov using a numerical model derived from the three-step model, we're calculating the emission in time of the XUV yield corresponding to a spectrum between 25 and 45 eV for different carrier envelope phase, that there is depending on the current velocity phase, the emission of a single attosecond pulse or double attosecond pulse when the gate width is comparable to half an optical cycle. The single attosecond pulse is short and is about 200 attoseconds in this example. But for even shorter gate, then one can have the maximum amplitude in the single attosecond pulse as compared to the double pulse. So in summary, the single pulse emission strongly depends on the current envelope phase. This can be explained because the gate position is defined by the pulse envelope. But the current envelope phase dependent field drives or not the recolliding electron wave packet in or out of the gate. And we observe the current envelope phase dependent pulse amplitude. And also it's important to note there is no significant change for the central single attosecond pulse, which is short. You can see even for different gate widths, this pulse is nearly identical. So now we know all the ingredients of the recipe to achieve the goal, the isolation of a single attosecond pulse. And this is why we move to Milano to do the experiment with their very nice laser system, which is CP stabilized, providing few cycle pulses. So we use two wedges to control the relative carrier envelope phase. We are very careful in having Fourier limited pulse in the interaction zone. We use, of course, our polarization modulator. And we set the gas jet after the focus in such a way one single XUV burst is selected every half cycle. In other words, we have selected the short trajectory in this experiment. And in this experiment, we will do a spectral characterization of the confinement. So we will use a VUV spectrometer. The spectral signature of the confinement is quite obvious. When we have the temporal confinement, we have a spectral broadening of the harmonic line widths up to a continuum when a single attosecond pulse is produced. So in the experiment, we will study the XUV spectral evolution with the gate widths, and for every gate width, with the variation of the carrier envelope phase. The requirements are the following. One should have a spectral changing that are unambiguously correlated with the confinement. It means that one should start from well-defined harmonics. So this is why we use low laser intensity and low gas pressure. And also, one should keep exactly the same interaction parameter except for the polarization evolution. And you have seen that this can be achieved by simply rotating the axis of the second wave plate. So to start with, we have this large gate configuration with a nearly flat top intensity profile and with a constant ellipticity here. So the harmonics can be produced during this 11 femtosecond long pulse here. You see the harmonic spectra here for 51 different values of the carrier envelope phase, varied over 3 pi. And you see that the line width is really narrow, it's about 0.6 eV, and it does not depend on the carrier envelope phase. Both the amplitude is constant, the frequency is constant, and the line width is the same. Now, starting from this configuration, I start to rotate the axis of the second wave plate. Rotating it to 25 degrees, I've got immediately a gate width of about 1.6 femtosecond, and you immediately see a broadening of the harmonic line width. What I forget to mention is that on the right side here, we have the absolute value of the Fourier transform of the spectra. This allows us to estimate the number of attosecond pulses present in the trend. So you see on the former one that we have about 7 pulses. Here, some of them are already disappearing here. I rotate it again. Now we have a gate width of about 1.15 femtosecond. And you start to see an evolution of the line width and of the XUV yield upon changing the current envelope phase, which is periodic with the periodicity of pi. You see here that we have now mostly 2 pulses in the trend. With 1 femtosecond, the effect is even more impressive. And with 0.8 femtosecond, you can see that for some carrier envelope phase here, the second pulse is disappearing. And there is a dramatic change in the spectra upon changing the carrier envelope phase, going through a strongly modulated pulse to almost a broad continuum. This is more visible on the next slide here. You can see the change when the carrier envelope phase is varied by pi over 2 here. with a strongly modulated spectrum, with a line width which is about 1.6 eV, which is half the interval between two consecutive harmonics in energy. And here we have an almost continuum with a small modulation depth. So the carrier envelope phase is able to drive the transition from the double emission to a single emission. So we have simulated the experimental result using the model from Vasily Strelkov and then including the propagation on axis. And you see that the agreement is really striking between the experiment and the calculated spectrum. So it was also possible to calculate the time-dependent intensity profile of the XUV emission for the energy above 18 eV, which barely corresponds to the transmission edge of an aluminium filter. And you see that there is a chirp, a single chirp at the second pulse, which is produced here, with a very good temporal contrast. Indeed, we have here a secondary pulse, which is hardly visible with a linear scale, and there is less than 1% of the total energy in the secondary pulse. So despite this modulation, there is very low energy in secondary pulse. Also, this chirp, without the chirp, the Fourier limit here would be 165 attoseconds for this pulse. And I would like to stress that the compensation of this pulse is possible by using an aluminium filter exactly on this energy range. And this was demonstrated by Rodrigo Lopez Martins in Lund. And recently, our colleagues from Milano have used the aluminium filter and used a technique derived from the Frock technique to characterize the temporal profile of this pulse, and they measure something which is 130 attoseconds in a single pulse with a very good contrast. If we keep going on, no changing for neon, keeping the same gate parameter, so the same wave plate with the same pulse duration, we have indeed a shorter gate because the critical ellipticity is smaller in neon as compared to argon. So we've got a stronger confinement in neon. And you see that we have here a strong carrier envelope phase dependent amplitude. The single emission is dominant. For most of the carrier envelope phase, we have really a broad continuum, which is larger than 30 eV in a different spectral range between 35 eV now and 70 eV. Also, one can reproduce, maybe with a less striking agreement, the spectrum that we have detected here again for two different carrier envelope phase separated by pi over 2. And it corresponds here to a 215 attosecond chirp pulse, which would be 85 attosecond if the chirp is compensated. But as the confinement is really strong, it was possible to slightly broaden the gate width a little bit. And it can be achieved very easily by decreasing the delay introduced by the first plate. And the main advantage doing so is to have a larger intensity inside the gate. And then it is possible to really extend the continuum here, extend the cutoff beyond 100 eV. And now we have a continuum which is about 50 eV. Again, the calculations are quite in a good agreement with the observed spectrum. And the pulse duration now is about 48 attoseconds if the linear shock is compensated. This is achieved here numerically in the calculation. And it takes into account all the energy, about 39 eV. And it corresponds more or less to the beginning of the transmission of a silicon filter. So you have seen in the paper that was presented by Hahn that such a filter can be used to select some part of the spectrum which is produced in neon. So exactly here between 40 eV and 100 eV, so it fits quite well. But okay, the experiment remains to be done. Now finally, before going into the conclusion and the perspective, I would like to stress once more that the carrier envelope phase is very crucial. The carrier envelope phase stabilization is very crucial in this experiment. So this is some spectra obtained in neon for a slightly longer gate. It's 0.9 femtosecond, so it's really below half an optical cycle. And you may think it's okay, the confinement is there, and one should get isolated attosecond pulse for some carrier envelope phase. But you can see here that one can observe a strong modulation for any of the carrier envelope phase here varied over 1.5 p. So it means that there are several attosecond pulses that are needed. If we look at two cuts in this spectrogram for two different current envelope phase, you can see that the modulation shifted by half an interval. And if we sum up over all the possible current envelope phase, it results in a broad continuum. So once again, when we have carrier envelope phase averaging going on, we may detect a broadband continuum, but it doesn't mean that a single pulse is emitted. So it's only when we have the carrier envelope phase stabilization that one can unambiguously connect the continuum to the emission of a single pulse. So the conclusion are the following. With our technique, one can achieve a continuous attosecond control of the electron wave packet. Or more precisely, one can control the number of recolliding electron wave packets. And you have seen in the paper that was presented by Anne-Louis et al. It can be very useful to have only two pulses. So this can be achieved with this technique quite easily. Regarding the emission of XCV pulses, here we have used this technique to produce broadband and tunable single attosecond emission. By tunable here, I mean that we are able to produce a broadband isolated attosecond pulse in different spectral regions, in argon between 25 and 40 V, or in neon between 35 and 70 V, or by slightly changing the delay introduced by the wavelet between 50 and 100 dB. So we can now access to different energy range. So one can do single attosecond pulse for different purposes now. And of course, with the broadband width that we have observed now, it supports the single attosecond pulse with a duration below 100 attosecond. Of course, the chirp remained to be compensated in real experiment to use this resolution. And also, we have quite a low energy. Unfortunately, less than 0.1 nanojoule per isolated pulse. I mean, we've got the value. The VUV spectrometer that we use was nicely calibrated in the University of Padova, so we can give absolute numbers here. So it's quite low, but still, there is a lot of room for improvement here. I would like to stress that we use low intensity, moderate gas pressure. So even in the experiment, there was some room to improve this yield. We keep it low because we were looking at the spectrum. But also now there are some high energy, few millijoule, few cycle pulses that are now available using new pulse compression technique or OPCPR derived laser system. Also, one can use the polarization gating in combination with some other technique by using omega-2 omega field synthesis to break this periodicity of half an optical cycle and to extend it to one cycle, so to produce one pulse only every cycle. And then this technique can apply to longer pulses, about 12 femtoseconds, with more energy again. Also, there are other, albeit more complicated, schemes to do some polarization gating for more efficient harmonic generation with standard laser pulses around 20 femtoseconds. And it was presented by a Roman co-worker quite recently. So my perspective are twofold. First, regarding the production of isolated attosecond XCV pulses, with energetic few cycle pulses and or using longer wavelengths, as you have seen from the talk from Lou DiMoro, one can really hope to extend significantly the cutoff beyond the KV. By the way, it was already demonstrated using 800 nanometer or 750 nanometer in this paper from Ceres and co-worker, where they go beyond one up to 1.3 kilo electron volt. So using the polarization gating technique, we're looking forward to produce super continuum of 100 of qubit and can support duration of only few attosecond pulses that will be suitable to probe multi-electron relaxation at the atomic unit time scale, such as Auger processes or direct double ionization. But also one of the interesting characteristic of our technique is the possibility to tune the energy of the sub-femtosecond XCV pulses. And then one can think about doing selective studies from excited to low linear orbital dynamics in molecules. To start with a very simple molecule, a molecule for physicists, we will try to map out the H2 plus vibrational wave packet in a pump probe experimental scheme. What are the challenges? Clearly, we need some spectral filtering and chirp compensation if you would like to achieve really sub-100 attosecond pulses. This means that one needs spectral reshaping, but this could occur naturally, the spectral reshaping through the reabsorption of the harmonic through the propagation of the harmonic in the medium, and also it occurs through the confinement itself. The lower order harmonics are really suppressed in this process as compared to the higher order harmonics. One can use, of course, metallic filter, but they have some very well-defined and specific bandwidths. Using chirping XUV mirror, but they have a low reflectivity. One can use also the plasma dispersion to add some negative GDD to compensate for the positive chirp of the XUV yield. I hope that you have seen the poster that was presented by a Hyun-Tech team from the CAIST about a very nice experiment where they do it exactly in the generating medium with a long 12 millimeter long cell. And also, maybe another possibility is to start with a very limited intrinsic at a second chirp in the XUV pulse. And this can be potentially achieved by using longer wavelength. And the second part of the perspective is really to use the single recolliding electron wave packet instead of the XUV pulse itself. So this is the tomography of stationary orbitals that has been demonstrated by Itatani and co-worker. They were using long pulses where there are identical recolliding electron wave packets that probe the orbital. So if no, only one recollision is selected, then we can do some time-resolved tomography of non-stationary orbitals or non-stationary electronic wave function. For this, we need a broad electron wave packet energy spectrum, but this is exactly what we get with our technique. Secondly, one can achieve an attosecond temporal resolution, provided the chirp is known. What is important here is that there's no need for compensating for the energy chirp of the electron wave packet, provided the chirp is known or measured. So before I stop, I would like to thank all my colleagues and co-workers, especially in Celia, my colleague and friend, Eric Constant. Inigo Solar was a European postdoc, and we did really a great job. And he's the first author of this paper that was recently published in Nature Physics. Luc Eluga, Amel Zahir, Olivier Tcherbakov, who are PhD students, and also all the group from Amluye in Lund, Rodrigo Lopez Martins, Catalin Verju, Johan Moritzson, Per Jonsson. The group of Mauro Nisoli in Milano, Giuseppe Sanson, Enrico Benedetti, Jean-Pascal Combe, Salvatore Staggira, Caterina Vozzi. Also Luigi Paoletto and Paolo Villoresi from the University of Padova, and of course special thanks to Vasilis Rebkov, who did really a great job in simulating all those experiments. Thank you for your attention.
That's a very fine talk. I have some questions. Well, I have one question. When you use your polarization gradient, to get to the single attosecond pulse, do you get the same threshold in terms of laser amplitude in terms of coming back to the atom to, in other words, do the quantum motor forces enter the same way to prevent you from sort of improving the process? You have that limitation when you have a train of pulses, which is single polarization, but do you get that same threshold when you try to limit yourself to a single atom pulse?
I'm not sure to understand your question.
Well, at some point, the electron at very high laser powers has quantum motor force and moves away from the atom, so it doesn't come exactly back to it.
Yeah.
And does that threshold enter in the same way when you convert things to the single atom pulse?
No, I think it's the same.
It's the same threshold?
Yeah, I think it's the same, yeah.
Okay. But we know that it has to.
A related question, I think,
I would have expected a lower ionization yield in the leading edge of the pulse with the circular polarization. No, I don't think so. In contrary, I guess one can slightly increase the saturation intensity of ionization using such a polarization-shaped pulse. but the effect should be not be very tremendous.
Any other questions? If not, let's thank our speaker again.